My name's Paul Bennyworth from the Centre for Knowledge, Innovation, Technology and Enterprise at Newcastle University. Today I'm going to talk about universities' engagement with hard-to-reach communities. What we want to do is use this as a way to explore universities' wider societal contributions in the context of a clearly changing social compact between societies, governments and their universities. So we want to explore how universities can work with hard-to-reach communities, use their knowledge capital to help solve the deep-seated problems of social exclusion that are increasingly important to policymakers today, as a way to understand wider changes in the higher education sector. So I'd like to say, firstly, thank the funders and the people who made it possible for us to be here today, and in particular, the other members of the research team, David and Cheryl, who are with me today, Catherine and Lynn, who aren't. The idea behind our paper is that engagement by universities has been driven by so many different forces and has emerged in such a diverse fashion that in a recent rush to simplify engagement, conceptually and as a policy tool, what has been lost is a bit of the value, a bit of the impact of what universities can offer. So what we want to do is use a detailed study to reflect on in particular, how policymakers can encourage universities to help deliver a widest set of societal benefits. So the first thing, and I think everyone has touched on it today, is that it's important to acknowledge the wider set of changes that our society has gone through that are undoubtedly affecting the social compact with universities. For 30 years, we've gone through a process of increasing liberalisation of markets, increasing internationalisation. There's been the rise of the paradigm of new public management that has affected the way that social institutions such as universities are regarded. We've heard again today about the increasing importance of knowledge capital to economic production, innovation and competitiveness. There's an increasing realisation that in the 21st century we face a whole new set of challenges: climate change, resource scarcity, demographic ageing, social exclusion. And the way that society uses knowledge to solve those problems will be critical to the sustainability of our societies. And these new situations, these new drivers, have created new challenges for universities and new responses from them. Universities find themselves judged in new ways. Universities compete in new markets. University knowledge can be exploited in new ways. You only have to look at the environment for spin-off companies that the growth, until very recently, of venture capital has created. There are new societal institutions. Devolution has created new bodies who request or demand new kinds of input from universities. So there's many concurrent pressures coming together on universities to deliver engagement. And universities have responded in many different ways. And in an attempt to bundle up, make sense of the engagement activity, there's been this idea of the third mission for universities. And policymakers have been active in the evolving way in which we regard university engagement. Deal here with the case of England, where you see in 1997, Lord Deering pulled a few early experiments together to create a coherent vision, a vision of a dedicated third stream of funding for university engagement, underpinning this third mission. This began experimentally with HeroBack. It evolved into a permissive environment through the early rounds of Hive, and it's now become mainstream, driven by metrics. And other nations, both in the UK and abroad, have their own similar but different stories to tell about their policy for promoting the third mission. And the reality is, it's a very messy situation with a lot of activity. And there has been a drive to simplify this situation in recent years. The reality is that universities face tensions in carrying out engagement. In particular, there's a gulf. We heard this, I think Alan articulated it very well, a gulf between the reality of the rhetoric of opportunity and the reality of outcomes that emerge. Engagement has remained on the periphery of the contemporary idea of a university. Our concern is that the reality of competitive, ranked, evaluated norms in higher education have produced a very limited, a very restrictive, and a very easily enumerated version of engagement. We don't think that this is deliberate, and we have the question, can and how are universities making a wider difference on their host societies? So we want to ask, can universities fulfil a wider version of engagement beyond a narrow commercialisation agenda? If so, what are the implications? Implications on the one hand for institutional management of universities, and implications on the other for policies to encourage and empower that engagement activity. Now, we've heard about the importance of robust evidence. And so in order for our answer to be as convincing as possible, we've set the bar high and we've asked the question, can universities make a difference to socially excluded communities? Can they contribute to solving this grand challenge of the 21st century and help these communities address the social exclusion that they face? Not just in a short-term sense, but leaving behind a legacy of social capital that gives these communities a greater sense of self-determination. To answer this question, we look firstly at how universities are organising their engagement activity, and then secondly, we use detailed case studies to look at the legacy that engagement is creating in those communities. So we've had an extensive phase of research where we've spoken to 33 universities in three territories, the Northeast, Northwest, and Scotland. We've tried to, in every institution, we've spoken to a senior manager, an engagement office, an academic involved with engagement. We're now moving to an intensive research phase where we've identified a handful of really quite eye-catching projects, arenas where community engagement is taking place in ways that university and community are working together in parallel to develop social capital. And precisely as Michael found out and reported this morning, there's a great deal of activity of community engagement taking place across all 33 HEIs. Everybody is doing a huge amount of stuff. All the universities have activities in a majority of the areas that we have found and put into this classification. So this attempts to set out the different types of activity that universities do in terms of engagement. But what it doesn't do, unfortunately, is enable us to make a distinction of scope, between individual academics who are working with communities because it's something that they feel driven to do, all the way through to new campuses that are being developed in regeneration areas to anchor growth and gentrification. Alan's already cited the example of Queen's Campus in Stockton. So how to consider the scope of impact? And what the table shows from a sample of projects is the scope of community benefits that have been produced. We don't claim that this is scientific, this is on the basis of the projects that we've seen. And what we try to show is was the impact purely symbolic for the communities, or did it provide them with access to a facilities that potentially worth millions? Was it one-off, temporary, a special project, linked to funds that ran out, as Alan mentioned, or was there evidence that the university sought to secure ongoing community involvement and access in the activities? And in the work that we undertook, we saw four areas where we really started to see significant community benefits potentially emerging. So to highlight some of the kinds of activities where we saw evidence that communities might potentially be benefiting in these ways, so activities where community members were actively involved in research projects. So at Manchester Metropolitan University, for example, the course Community Psychology brings people with mental health issues actually into the university research community, helps them work with the students to bring outside knowledge into the community, so from the community into the university. Likewise, Newcastle University's Beacon for Public Engagement is taking a very community-focused route to bringing knowledge from the outside in and helping researchers assimilate it. Something else that we found remarkable was that there was a research unit at Salford University that was undertaking financial research into financial exclusion and innovative solutions to that, but also was working with banks and the communities to help implement those activities in practice and was involved in setting up innovative credit unions in those places. Two very different institutional types, Durham and Liverpool Hope, have developed campuses, including student accommodation, in very rundown areas of their respective towns. in parallel with building bridges into those communities. The Durham Queen's Campus at Stockton, for example, runs a course in community medicine where everyone, the 200 students a year who progress into a clinical medical degree, undertake specialist training in medicine in these harder to reach communities, including a compulsory community-based work module. Edge Hill University at Ormskirk, it's developed a sport, health, well-being facility in which elite users and leisure users are used to create a subsidy which subsidises health and fitness by prescription type activities for neighbouring inner city communities. So to summarise phase one, importantly we see is that it's not just something for the newer universities. There's evidence that all the universities are active in engagement terms. It's most visible, most effective, we think, in those institutions where there is strong leadership provided by a manager with a firm commitment to the principles of being engaged. What that senior manager does is, on the one hand, helps to integrate resource flows within the university to create these eye-catching projects that we've alluded to previously, but also make the university community as a whole take its responsibility to external communities seriously and permit itself to be held account for what it does. So, in a sense, the senior manager helps to create a supportive environment for engagement in the university. If you think of universities as places which draw on resources from a variety of scales, globally, nationally, and regionally, and which produce benefits at all those scales for a variety of different stakeholders, then the effective projects are those which successfully combine resources and interests from a set of stakeholders in order to meet the various interests of those stakeholders. And critically, that is also true for community engagement activities. Successful engagement activities are those which are deeply embedded in the wider practices and activities of the university as a whole. So, peeling back the layers of the multi-layered, multi-level university, how does this all hold together in a single institution? So, the second element of the presentation is the case study of a single institution. It's Liverpool Hope University, which was formed from the merger of three teacher training colleges in Liverpool. And because the merger was not proceeding entirely smoothly, the management sought to create a common shared vision for the future. And community engagement was to become an important element of that shared vision. That was critical because it created an institutional imperative for engagement. The three teacher training colleges all had a religious background, and two of them had links to the Catholic Archdiocese, who had a school in a very poor part of Liverpool, in Everton. And it made the school available to the university for £1. And the university committed to develop a new campus, which was later to become known as the Cornerstone Campus, in the Everton site. This was to be a flagship for engagement activity. It was to be an embodiment of the new coherent Liverpool Hope University. And critically, it was to be embedded in and contribute to the development of this, the second poorest ward in England. The Cornerstone Campus, the building, the university assembled funding from a variety of sources, from Objective One, from Hefke Strategic Development Funding, from the Regional Development Agency, from its widening participation activities, and it's created a programme of refit, and it built two new buildings and is currently working on a third. This created what Michael referred to as a public space for engagement, located in the community, which it then filled up with a variety of community-facing activities. It moved a whole set of activities down to Everton Arts, which it moved into a newly named faculty, the Deanery of Arts and Community. The unique selling point for this new university was that every student who graduated from its arts courses would also have undergone community placement. And given that far more people in the arts are employed in community development organisations than arts themselves, this is a unique employability asset for the graduates, but also encourages them to be going out into the community and bringing the community in as a regular part of their education. The second element was that the managers worked very closely with an existing community council. Initially, they worked together to smooth out the wrinkles of a new employer setting up in a locality, problems around car parking and access and noise. But over time, the community council and university started to identify common problems, common issues that they worked together to solve. So an area of interest for both was Everton Rise, which was a park created in the 1980s from the demolition of a factory that had never really worked as a park and had been taken over by drug users and prostitutes. And so the university and community council have worked together with the culture company, to try and use community art as a way to get students and the community together in the park to recreate it as a community asset. Thirdly, they were very active in recruiting porters locally, not just from Liverpool, not just from Everton, but from the streets around the university, to give the university a face that smiled at the community, a face that fitted with the community. And that has actually proven very, very effective in maintaining the quality of the state. And then finally, they also opened their doors to a host of third sector organisations, community activities. I've listed the Weekend Arts College, Collective Encounters, which is a theatre for social change organisation, the European Opera Centre, all organisations that had links with the community and brought the community into the university. Critically, all these activities were building networks which brought the community in and let the university flow out. And what this slide shows is, this is a slide from one side of the campus to the other. The easiest way to portray these impacts and the success is the site, because it's now very attractive. What you're looking at is the collegiate. It's an old Anglican seminary building that was developed by Will Allsop and Urban Splash into expensive urban apartments. Shows the fact that the gentrification is creeping into North Liverpool. But also, it shows the integration of the campus into the community. You will see no gates. It's a clean, it's attractive, there's no graffiti vandalism, and if you zoom in, you won't see any rubbish. This is a physical sign of the more general point we want to make, that Cornerstone is well embodied into the community. Turning Everton round is a long-term process, but what we would argue is that Cornerstone is a serious commitment to this process. It's visible, it's demonstrably effective, and as Michael pointed out, it's likely to be sustainable, because universities tend to stay for a long time in one location. In conclusion, university engagement isn't a simple process, it is a team game. It involves networks and pathways that have to actively be built up and created from a range of societal institutions. Societal institutions that create activities that the community can also become involved in and take some sense of ownership over. So, the most effective forms of community engagement policy are those that help universities to create these networks, networks both with the community but also networks with a wider set of societal partners. So what we would argue is that effective engagement is intrinsically embedded within effective higher education management processes. Universities that are engaging effectively are creating supportive environments for their staff, their university community, to effectively engage. But at the same time, they're balancing that against the other stakeholders that place demands on universities, because the community is just one set, or just one body that potentially the university has a duty to. Effective engagement has to be made to fit into universities. So in the context of today's seminar, clearly there are a range of policy-making bodies, and in particular the funding councils, who are clearly important stakeholders to universities. There is the potential for them to give an impulse to engagement simply by writing it into funding requirements, asking universities to demonstrate that engagement, along with teaching research quality, is something that they are serious about. Not just funding councils, but all kinds of bodies that hold universities to account. University engagement remains, as a policy area, something that's relatively experimental. And anything that's experimental brings with it the risk of failure. And it is inevitable that some universities will attempt to engage, and in doing so, they will fail. And yet, those failures provide an opportunity for learning, by universities, but also policymakers. So, to sum up, there is a huge potential for university engagement that can potentially be more systematically tapped. And it will be a partnership of universities and policymakers that help to drive that forward and unleash the potential that universities have to contribute to broader societal problems. Thank you very much.